Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Well, I took the liberty of inviting two old friends into the studio today because they'd written a book, and I read this book, and I was so impressed and so delighted by it. I thought, this sounds like a piece of radio. The book itself sounds like radio because this couple, who are Alaskans who have been here for a very long time and have many great memories, wrote a book in which they have a dialogue back and forth about what's happened to them and what they've experienced. And today I want to share some of that dialogue with you, but in a live format here on the radio, and you can join it as well with your questions. My guests are Malcolm and Cindy Roberts, and they're here with me in the studio today. Welcome, Malcolm.
Thanks, Charles. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here, Cindy.
All right. Thank you.
So I think you guys are pretty well known, but for those who don't, Malcolm was an aide to Governor Wally Hickel, going all the way back to the 1960s, when Hickel was the Secretary of the Interior, came to Alaska, and he and Cindy have been here ever since, so have seen the great majority of the history of Alaska within politics, within the community. They helped start the wonderful Bridge Builders group here in Anchorage, which works on connecting our Anchorage diversity and so many other things. And they wrote this book, which is called Magic Moments, Battles Worth Fighting, and Joys Worth Celebrating, which is a joint memoir. And we're going to talk a lot more about that, about their memories, and we will really welcome your thoughts and questions for Malcolm and Cindy. The phone number here is 550-8433. 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I want to start with a story at the beginning, Malcolm. You were a young man, an Ivy Leaguer, a journalist, having a pretty good time in life. And you never had any conception of going to Alaska until you got a journalistic assignment to go and sort of check it out, right? What year was that?
That was 1966. It was during the Fairbanks flood of 1966, which followed 2 years after the largest earthquake in history. Most of it hit Alaska, and an editorial in the Toronto Globe and Mail of Canada wrote an editorial titled "Why Would Anyone Want to Live in Alaska?" Well, one of our staff was
which for coming from Canadians, I really.
Well, you know, they said, "Oh, it's you know,
cold, earthquakes,
it's wet now, it's earthquakes, it's cold, etc." And one of our staff was Yvonne Mosey. She was born and raised in Nome. By the way, she was very proud of the fact she was valedictorian of her class. So there was only one other student, but she was the valedictorian. But she was a wonderful person, and so four of us headed up from Los Angeles to do this story, Why Would Anyone Want to Live in Alaska?
And you were working, it was a big photo magazine, if people remember, like Look or these Life, these big, large format photo magazines, which no longer exist, actually went out of business mostly a long time ago.
Well, that's right. We emphasized photography. And so you could actually open the magazine, and you could get the picture, you could get the story from the photographs. Mm-hmm. If you wanted more, you could read the captions, and if you really liked it, you could read the text. That was our sort of our stair step, but it was a great experience for us. And I went with a photographer to Juneau, met the governor at that time, Wally Hickel, who's a very young governor, and he was just heading north to help Fairbanks with the flood situation. Apparently he put in the back of his mind he'd like to have me work for him someday. Well,
let me stop you before you go any farther, and I want to ask Cindy the same question. So everybody has their story of how they fell in love with Alaska, unless you're like got dragged here before you're old enough to know any better. What was it? Was it the people? Was it the scenery? What made you want to be part of Alaska? I mean, was it on that trip that you really realized this was a place that you wanted to have more to do with?
No. It was because our magazine closed its doors, and as did those other magazines you mentioned. And when Secretary Hickel heard that I was available, he had me come back to
him. It was a job offer.
That's right. And he, I went into his, you know, the massive secretary's office in Interior, and he said, Malcolm, I have a philosophy. I want to get to America. Do you want to help me? I said, yes, sir. He said, how soon can you start? I said, well, I'll go back to California, get my VW bug, and I'll be here as fast as I can. Well, hurry up. But before you go, write a speech for me, because I'm meeting with the American Petroleum Institute next week, and I need a speech. And so we'd been writing about environmental issues, all sorts of issues, women's issues, and so on, in Pace magazine. And so I went to this office, wrote a speech. They sent it into the secretary. He came out and said, Malcolm, I'm not going to change a word in this. It's just what I need. And, you know, I was bowled over. But that got me started. And so
This is basically 1968, 68, 69, somewhere in there.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. So I think that it's easy for Alaskans who haven't been around to forget that we had a governor who was appointed by President Nixon to be the Secretary of Interior for the entire country. And it was extremely controversial. It was expected that he was going to be a right-winger, wasn't want to do anything for the environment. And when he got there, he turned out to be exactly the opposite. And he connected with young people. He connected with the national parks, with protecting the environment from the oil industry. And it was a big surprise for everyone.
Well, it was, and it started off with 6 days after he was sworn in as secretary, there was a tremendous blowout in Santa Barbara, in one of the rigs offshore Santa Barbara. It was a terrible environmental disaster. And
this is what gave rise to Earth Day.
Exactly
and
right.
And the EPA and all these things.
Exactly right. And the White House, they said, Wally, you handle it. It was a hot one. Wally got in a plane, flew to California, saw the situation, and shut down all offshore drilling because there were no regs in place for how to drill offshore. They just used what they did onshore. And before he left office, he was sued for $500 million, he and the government, for cutting them off for a couple of months, what the money they lost. And it was quite a battle in that courtroom. But Wally won the day. They didn't get a penny.
Uh-huh. I want to bring Cindy in here because the book is a dialogue, as I said. Both of my guests go back and forth in telling stories. Cindy, I take it you didn't have any plan of going to Alaska either.
Actually, I was delighted. I was not planning on it. Mal and I were married 2 days after Wally was fired by the president.
Okay.
So instead of being able to, you know, continue
instead
to...
Instead of Washington,
it was, you know, the far north. But I'd spent a year in Sweden, so I was absolutely delighted.
You like the north.
To go back.
So
yeah.
I want to have you tell the story of how you guys met and married, which I didn't learn until I read the book. And to say I was surprised would be to put it mildly, because this is... You wouldn't necessarily advise your kids to do it this way.
Well, actually, we did advise our oldest to not repeat this, and she did, and she's been wonderfully happily married for over 20 years.
And how long have you guys been married?
46 this year.
Yeah. So far, so good.
So far, yeah. I'd say we're still scoring pretty well on you know, all the different criteria. Anyway, when... your question was, you know,
how did you guys meet and you got married super quickly super quickly.
Malcolm was traveling with Secretary Hickel, who had just come across the Canadian Arctic on a tour with Canada's Minister of Indian Affairs and Northern Development, a gentleman who later became Prime Minister?
No. Yes, yeah.
Jean Chrétien.
Jean Chrétien.
Anyway, they had made this trip across the Arctic, stopped in Anchorage, came to Portland to participate. Hickel came, and his staffer, aide.
Who was Malcolm, right?
Malcolm, right. Yeah, the Canadian went home. Malcolm came south. They were on their way to the Western White House for a meeting with Nixon. But they stopped in Portland to participate in the dedication of a huge hydroelectric plant that was going in on the Columbia River. And some of the guys that I was working with to put together an environmental conference knew about the secretary's tour coming in. They were also attached to the Bonneville Power. And in the conversations with them, trying to get them to get the state to work on this environmental conference, it came out that I spoke Swedish. Well, I had this Swedish executive coming into town and said, how would you like to come to dinner and help us out? Uh-huh. So I was at the right place, met the secretary, met his staffer. They thought I should talk about the environmental conference I was working on, and that led to the dinner, the conversation very briefly with the Swedish gentleman, et cetera, and Mal and I had time. He decided rather rapidly that, you know, there may be another identity for me.
So how long did you know Cindy before you proposed?
I proposed?
Yeah.
I would say... Probably 24 hours.
Amazing. And you said yes pretty quickly.
Within a week.
Wow. Okay.
But here's the trick. I mean, that sounds like it's really random.
It does, yes.
You know, back I know everyone your age, Charles, loves this story. And sort of teenagers who can't believe that, you know, Cinderella things happen. You know, I was 24 when I met Malcolm. And back in the dark ages then, if any young woman was that old and not engaged or married, something was definitely wrong, you know. And so I had a going bet, you know, that, oh, you will be married long before that. And it turned out that I, over the years, had sort of built a list as to, okay, all the guys.
What you were looking for. Yeah, you talk about this. I love that.
Right. So I strongly suggest that to everyone who happens to be listening.
Have some criteria. Have a rubric. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and so, you know, you get the proposal and you go, where's the list? Start checking
did
stuff.
Did you give him a form or something to fill out?
I didn't need it on paper.
So the first item on our list was somebody tall. Well, I'm 6'4", so that I got past that one. Uh-huh. But then we were up in a park above Portland. Secretary Hickel and Bob Atwood was in town. They were off for the evening. And so we went up there, and we decided we better talk pretty candidly. And I said, well, you know, we've just been through 10 years of the sort of new age young people, you know, not really caring about if they're married or not.
The 1960s, the free love and all that stuff.
Free love and all that stuff. And I said, I don't think I could out-argue them. But for me, I believe in sticking to my promises. And I plan to be faithful. So this was part of my pitch. Mm-hmm. And then I asked Cindy for her list, and she had her list, which she just told us some of it.
Yeah, neat.
Yeah.
So I want to tell people who you're listening to again. This is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth, and my guests are Malcolm and Cindy Roberts. They've just published a new book, Magic Moments, Battles Worth Fighting and Joys Worth Celebrating, which is available here in town at the UAA bookstore and at the Two Friends Gallery. You can also get one by sending them an email at mal@gci.net, mal@gci.net. It's a self-distributed book. Thanks to Dave Waldron. He's bringing coffee because we're kind of having a coffee clutch here. And you can also hear Malcolm and Cindy speak. They're going to be talking about how to do a memoir next Tuesday at the Senior Center. That's the 18th from 10 to noon. They'll be leading a discussion about doing a memoir on what they learned while working on this project. And I want to talk about that more in the second half, and listeners may have questions. I've met so many folks who have their own ideas for writing their story, whether it's just for family or for publication, and can't figure out how to get started. And you guys did it in a really unique way that worked really well. So you were working, Malcolm, for the Secretary of the Interior, and it's one of the most tumultuous times in American history when the Vietnam War is going on, huge marches are happening in Washington. He is actually getting a little out of step with the administration because he's big on these environmental issues and he's really connected with the kids who are protesting. And then he wrote a letter, which was released to the media, to the president, which was really a bombshell. Tell us a little bit about that, about what happened.
Well, Wally was really upset when the president announced in a cabinet meeting that he was going to have our military invade Cambodia next to Vietnam. When he accepted the job, talked with the president and his people about being in the cabinet as interior secretary, the governor had assured him that they were going to phase down and out of the Vietnam War. Well, here it was gearing up again, and the young people were really livid, because they were the ones who were giving their lives in the war that they didn't believe in. And you may remember there was killings at the Kent State, where there was a large protest, and the
National Guard opened fire on the students.
The National Guard opened fire, had killed six of them, and another six or eight were badly wounded. And so Wally was just furious, and he wrote a letter to the president, which got leaked to the media, and it really made him a national personality. Then 60 Minutes, the CBS program, with Mike Wallace, did a TV interview with him, and that really made the White House furious. But they didn't want to fire Wally right then, because it was just before that summer, and they didn't want to make him a hero. And so they had him help many of the candidates, Republican candidates, who were running for re-election or for election, one being who became eventually the first President Bush in Texas. So we traveled to those locations while he spoke and so on. And
You were on his inside team, and you were a young person, and he always loved being surrounded by young people. Was there any surprise to you that he would have written this letter? It's quite an extraordinary thing to do, and something that very few leaders do. I mean, they keep it quiet, they sort of keep it undercover, they protect themselves. Here he was pushing this issue, which really isn't about interior, it's about his morals and his ethics, out and embarrassing the president.
Well, it didn't surprise me. In fact, I worked on the first draft of that letter. He didn't use a single word I wrote, but he did his own. But it was just Wally all the way. I mean, he
so
wasn't.
Did you
there.
Did you say I think you should do this letter and write
no,
a draft?
No, this was completely his idea, and he wanted to get word to the young people of America that it wasn't just everybody in government were just determined to send them off to war, that there were some people who understood that there were other values and important things. So that's why he wrote the letter. And the 60 Minutes program was dynamic. After we got back from that summer of traveling around and backing up Senate candidates, Mike Wallace came back again. So we had a meeting in the secretary's office, and Mike said, well, we want you to come back on the program. And Wally said, well, I'm not sure. And I knew if he did, it was all over.
He didn't know how to be tactful.
Well, he wasn't interested in being tactful. Mike said, well, Wally, if you don't resign, are you going to quit? He said, Mike, if I leave, it's with a bullet, it's with an arrow in my heart and not a bullet in my back. And this was, you know, you met Wally.
Yeah.
He was dyslexic, but he had a wonderful way with words.
He did.
So they decided right that minute to do another version of Hickel in 60 Minutes. And when I watched the program from my apartment across the Potomac, way up, looking down, I thought the White House would be on fire. I couldn't see any smoke, but I knew they were furious. Well, then I got on the plane to fly to California to meet Cindy for our wedding.
Oh my gosh.
While I was in the plane, Cindy, over to you.
So you sort of were watching all this from quite a distance.
I was in California.
Stuff happening.
Yeah,
but everybody in the country knew about it.
Oh yeah, everyone did. And you know, I was in California. And I was actually driving down to the San Francisco airport to meet Malcolm when I heard it on the radio. Good old radio. And so I was aware. But we talked about it, this sort of the what-if category, you know. And so once Mal got off the airplane in San Francisco, it took a couple minutes, just a couple more than a few, to sort of wind down and I said, okay, there's something you need to know, you know, while I got fired.
talk about a life event that's just
happened. Yeah, right. So he jokes that, you know, I had 2 days to back out of the wedding. And,
yeah, but you didn't. But you didn't.
No, obviously not.
Yeah. So did you realize at that point that you're probably going to Alaska?
No, we didn't know that, and we knew that Hickel was probably going to go home.
Mel wasn't going to have a job anymore.
Right, yeah. Right. He was very clear about that. But, no, so we, you know, there had been other surprises. This was, you know, okay.
There you go. Now and you're young, and you can roll with the punches, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. Well, we, you know, Cindy's hometown of Auburn, California, is a small town on the highway going up towards. Describe it, Cindy, and the Olympics that were there earlier.
Oh, yeah. The 1960 Olympics were in Squaw Valley. Uh-huh. So I grew up with this, you know, nice little trek up into the mountains. Mm-hmm. And Mel and I were headed out for a honeymoon after the wedding. Is this what you're leading to? Is the conversation that finally got to talk with Wally on the phone as we came back down the mountain ready to fly off to Jamaica to visit a friend and honeymoon there. We got the made contact, and Mel got the story of the publishers that wanted Wally's book.
Yeah.
And the question about, you know, well, when could you be here? Instead of saying, well, we're headed for the airport right now, he said, yeah, we're headed for the airport, but for our honeymoon. Hickel says, call me from there.
So this was the book, Who Owns America, which was
exactly.
A huge, huge bestseller, and you had a big part in working on that, too. So I want to let folks know that it's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. My guests are Malcolm and Cindy Roberts. We haven't even gotten out of the 1960s yet. And we're talking about their life story, their many years in Alaska, and the new book that they have just published, Magic Moments. And we welcome your calls and emails. I've got an email here from Ken, who wants to correct us. Four were killed at Kent State, Ohio, not six.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So
we've got a
better number.
We've got live corrections going on here.
Fact check.
So I want to jump ahead a little bit because this is not about Wally Hickel. It's about the two of you, and let's get to my very favorite story in the book, which was about Cindy. Entering the Miss America contest.
Actually, correction, Mrs.
Mrs. America contest, right, because you were already married.
Right.
And this is not something that we would all anticipate you would do, and the outcome of it is not, and I'm not going to spoil the ending, but the outcome is not necessarily what we would predict happened, and Malcolm's reaction is definitely not what we would predict. So tell the story of the Mrs. America pageant.
Okay. The abbreviated version of the story. In 1975, I began doing photography for a modeling agency here in town. So I was not only modeling, but helping to stage the photos and do all the rest of that stuff. So when it turned out that for a few years later, she got a, Eileen Seals was the lady's name, she got a call from the people organizing the Mrs. America pageant that had restructured after 2 years, you know, with new ownership. And they wanted to make sure every state was represented. So Eileen called me and called a number of other people, ladies, that I were also modeling for the agency and asked, you know, if we could find a gown, a talent, and permission from our husbands. Would we be willing to go to represent Alaska? So that sounded easy enough. So
you thought this sounds like a kick.
Oh gosh, yes. Oh yeah.
Like, why not? Right?
Oh yeah, right. You know, I would need a vacation. So I called Mal, gave him the spiel, said, you know,
can I have your permission?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like I think I can. You know, I just done a photo show for a gallery here in town, so I had the talent thing and knew people I could borrow dresses from. So I called Mal at work, and here he is in the middle of a Hickel campaign for governor in that year. And so the ultimate quote was, yes.
Yeah, sure. What does it mean? 2 weeks in Los Angeles and Vegas. Go. Just don't win.
Right. Because why you were thinking like that'd be embarrassing?
No, because we had two little kids.
So we're busy, right.
Yeah, right. And she was backing me up on the campaign thing. So, you know, just don't win it. You know, have fun. Just don't win.
So, yeah, crazy story. But it was. It was a great vacation. I did have time in L.A., and then the pageant was in Las Vegas. And, all sorts of funny stories. I had the fun.
It sounds like you weren't super serious about it.
Oh, no.
You were just sort of being part of the thing, right?
Well, it was fun because I had been a photographer for other models. Mm-hmm. You know, I made comments to the photo staff and said, hey, what about this photo angle? You know, so I was making friends in weird places, and I was having a ball and absolutely no insecurities because you have to want something really badly to be insecure.
Right. You didn't care to go less.
Right. You know, I had a busy life at home. This was 14 days off, you know, period. But it was interesting. But I got good questions.
Uh-huh.
And
tell us what happened.
All right, so
tell about the bathing suit competition.
Oh, jeez. All right, whatever ladies are out there in the listening audience, you can imagine being horrified with this one. So it turns out the sort of the price of a 2-week vacation with all these amazing other ladies and fun and no kids and no laundry and all the rest of that stuff. The one price was this parade in a swimsuit. So I managed, we were in alphabetical order.
Which
so
does
I was
not fr- sound like, it, from knowing no. you, it's not sound like
no,
like you
normally
do. No,
this is
how
my type,
right?
For a lot of good reasons. Anyway, I was after my roommate, Miss Alabama, and she was spectacular looking. And so I walked down, did the pirouette, you know, and I got to the end of it totally composed because I had little kids. You know, every little kid knows the story of the emperor's new clothes, right? So I figured if the emperor could pretend like he had clothes, so could I. But I made it all the way to the end of this thing.
And there are six judges or something.
Oh, yeah, six judges being very patient, watching us make the, you know, they had us, you know, total focus for a few minutes. I got to the end of the pirouettes and the rest of it and smiled, and I shrugged my shoulders and sort of rolled my hands like, sorry guys, can't get any better than this. and the judges, all of the men, absolutely died laughing. They just shrieked, you know. And of course at that point I'm leaving, I'm done, and all, you know, the next 48 women in line heard this riotous laugh.
They were all behind the curtains, so
what are they laughing at, you know? There are about 10 of them who are going to do this any day of the week, you know, and the rest of them were like I was, like, psh, what is this?
Yeah.
But it was that was my pay for the vacation, and
I had
no problem.
That definitely got you in their mind. So, let's jump to the way.
I think so. I probably scored 10 just because, you know, from each of those guys, just because it was funny. Anyway, got to the end of made it through the first question, got a smart question. And, you know, the last question, everyone was told you would be asked this question. And so we were told to write it down. Well, I wrote down the question, and, you know, a couple of days before the end of it, the whole thing, I managed to get this download from somewhere of what to say to the question. And so I was, you know, wondering where that came from, but feeling pretty confident. So when it got down to the wire, dished out the question, kind of walked back into the line of the five finalists and going, what is going on?
Uh-huh.
Walked away with it. So
and you won.
I won it.
You
won.
You're Mrs. America.
Mrs. America.
Amazing. So I got to. So give us the finale. Then you have to call Malcolm, who you promised you would not win.
No, she didn't promise.
No, I didn't promise.
I see.
I told her not to, but she didn't promise.
A dumb question to ask. You can tell folks that, he's been reading it in the book. What happens is I managed to say thank you to the judges, managed to go backstage, find a telephone. Of course, nobody had cell phones in those days. Called home. Got his mother first, who was staying with our kids. She was horrified. I said, well, Mom, I'm not going to be home tomorrow like I promised because I have to go to New York on my Good Morning America Where's Malcolm? Oh, he's still at the office. Okay, all right, talk to you later, click. This poor woman's terrified. And managed to get Malcolm. And, of course, I asked him if he had managed to set up a time when they would actually buy the show and air it in Anchorage. Oh, no, I've been too busy. You know how it is. It's sort of chaotic working on a campaign. So I said, well, you probably ought to work on that because I won the thing. And Malcolm, there's this silence. And Malcolm goes, oh, no.
How's that for being a classic, you know, supportive husband?
Yeah, right? That's it. You just lost a few points there. All right, we need to take a break. The time is going by so fast. I have so many more stories to hear about from my guests, Malcolm and Cindy Roberts. We have a couple of callers who are waiting, so we're going to get to those questions. I'm also going to give out those phone numbers after the break if you want to get on the air with our guests who have just published this book, Magic Moments, telling the story of their decades in Alaska, and as you can hear, their fun relationship and much more to tell. So please stay with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and my guests today are Malcolm and Cindy Roberts. They are longtime Alaskans. They've been involved in a million things, as you've heard, and are also fun storytellers with a wonderfully positive attitude, which I have always enjoyed, and so I thought I'd share it with you today. And you can enjoy more of their dialogue from their new book, Magic Moments, which is full of pictures and back and forth, and it's a memoir which is done with two voices, which is something I really enjoy. And we're going to talk more about how to do a memoir as we go on. I've written several myself for helping others. But first, I want to we're going to take some calls, and I want to let you know what the phone number is if you're interested in getting on the air with the Robertses. 550-8433 is the local number, 550-8433. And the out of Anchorage, there's a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And we also have an email address, hometown@alaskapublic.org. So first I want to go to Caroline, because she has a comment or question about the pageant story that Cindy was just telling. Cindy won the Mrs. America pageant against the wishes of her family and went off to do all the media and all that, leaving them home with the baby. So I have a picture of it right here, and it looks very 70s. Caroline, what was your question?
Well, it was, there are a couple of three questions. Number one, I would like you to have these folks back on sometime because their first book was really quite something, and Malcolm has made the trip to Norway, a group that I hope we contract with to help us whenever we find rare earth minerals up here, because they're pushing toward 900 billion and we've got our 54 billion, and it'd be interesting for folks to know how that happened. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was working at the NBC affiliate in Fairbanks. My name then was Carolyn Dowling, and Cindy will remember. I remember very little about the interview. I mean, almost nothing, except meeting Cindy and how charming she was. Not just charming. She was a real, honest-to-God person. Not somebody walking in with airs.
She didn't have
an entourage. But what a wonderful, wonderful person. And when I met Malcolm many, many years later, I'd say maybe a decade or two, honest to God, they are probably the best match I have ever seen, which gives me, and I'm sure other people, hope for such a thing. And honestly, if she remembers any of that, I would be thrilled to hear any comment she had about the essence of being Mrs. America in Alaska. What does that mean to people?
Good one, Caroline. Thanks. Cindy?
Hi, Caroline. Nice to hear your voice. What does it mean? You know, it was the most surprising part coming home was that it meant a lot to the rural communities. I mean, it was a bigger deal in rural Alaska.
An Alaskan who made good.
Yeah. Well, you know, that spring there'd been a young lady who won the Teenage America pageant, and you know, I never got to meet her. I didn't know anything about her, but it was like, you know, gosh, here, you know, we get somebody else who gets out there, mm-hmm. and it seems to be surprising good news for everybody.
Yeah, neat.
So the rural thing was cool.
Yeah. Let's go to another caller. SJ is calling from Anchorage. Go ahead.
Hey, Malcolm. Hi, Cindy.
Hello,
hi,
SJ.
So I have known Malcolm and Cindy for decades. I've had the pleasure through Bridge Builders to work with them as well, and I can truly say that I've never worked with anyone more gracious, more supportive, and more open to people from all walks of life. Something that I wanted to ask you guys for kind of public consumption is, you know, there have been times. I think it goes without saying that Malcolm, you were a Hickel Republican, and it goes without saying that that the two of you have taken public stands sometimes against what might be deemed as kind of the mainstream Alaska political view. And I wanted to hear about how you come to that decision when you do.
In other words, when you take a stand and stand up for principle.
Well, I left the Republican Party when Obama ran for president. I read his two books. I thought he was an outstanding individual, and I think my predictions were correct. I think he will go down as one of the great presidents of America. His incredible record, even though he was fighting a Congress, many of whom were not just motivated politically, but from racism. And he kept his he was classy throughout. And his wife, I think, was the best first lady that I've ever known about. I mean, Michelle is just a fantastic person. So as you talk about Hickel, a Republican, Hickel was the national committeeman at one point. And but he was never a very a party person of any kind. He stood for his own values and what he believed was the best, and it wasn't all about party.
Yeah, very true. So I also think about Rick Maestrom, who you also worked with quite a bit on the Olympic bids. And then you also worked when he was mayor on the Bridge Builders, which I want to get to. But the Olympic bids were a big part of life. And did you guys both get involved in working on the Olympic bids?
Very much so.
This is for listeners who don't know, Alaska, Anchorage, was on the table as being the place where the Winter Olympics would take place. We won the bid for America was essentially, we brought it forward twice. And went a long way and almost won, and there was actually some chicanery, some bribery that took place that one of the competing cities took it from a Salt Lake City. How did you get involved in that, and what did that mean to you?
Well, it meant everything to us, and I think it meant a whole lot to our whole community. Dwayne Hyman and his wife Carol established something called the Ambassador Program. I think it was how many people are on the IOC and nationally, Cindy.
International Olympic Committee. Remember, we had the important part was Anchorage had a personal attachment assigned to every one of the IOC members. They were all invited to come and see the venue sites that we had potentially, but they also had this individual or couple who pledged to go to their country. And pitched Anchorage, and, you know, make a real personal bid on a personal level for, you know, us to be able to host the games. So it was an amazing thing, probably one of the first here in town, where that second language or third or fourth or fifth that some people had was put to work in terms of saying who we were and why we thought it was
important. So your language capabilities came in handy again.
I said more than a couple words of Swedish during this whole thing. But we were designated to go to Mexico City, where Malcolm had been a journalist for the 1968 Summer Games.
Oh, neat.
And because I knew some of the stuff from the 1960 Winter Games in Squaw Valley, you know, we were a very easy sale to participate in this.
But I think the bottom line is that it really made Anchorage more of an international city. And I think that led to the Bridge Builders program, which you've mentioned, which was also started by Maestrom, in which the whole goal was to create the first city without prejudice. And, you know, now when we have something like 107 languages spoken in the homes of the children who go to public schools in this town, it's really important that there's be a welcoming spirit. And I believe that our current mayor is certainly championing that now, both he and his wife, Mara.
I want to get into that a little bit more, because I think that's a major accomplishment, which I think is easily overlooked. And maybe in terms of our time in history, is maybe the most important thing that's really happening in this town is the change in our demographics and a change in our population. I want to let listeners know, though, if they want to get on the air with my guests, Malcolm and Cindy Roberts, who've written a new memoir, the phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So the idea behind Bridge Builders was and is to connect individuals, to defeat racism by connecting individuals and getting them to know each other. And, you know, in a way, it was before it was prescient. It was before its time, because the wave of diversity was just getting started when you were doing this. Since then, we've obviously gained a huge minority population in Anchorage, now up to 40%. I looked at some stats. It's increasing at almost 1% a year. So we're really getting this reputation for being a community that has a strong, diverse population. And that is, and I don't know, you can tell me if you've heard the same thing, but that is known for being less racially divided than other communities. In other words, we've got the most integrated schools in the country, and we don't have some of the police issues and some of the other issues that happen in other communities. Don't think you totally take credit for that, but there was a real intense attempt to make this happen, and it fell on your desk, Malcolm. You know how this was going to roll out?
No, but Rick Maestrom was elected at a time of high crime, and he was determined to do something about it. And he had about 50 citizens who came and worked with him and brainstormed all sorts of things. One of the first things they did was deal with graffiti. Now, I don't know if you've seen graffiti in other cities, but if you go to Rome, Italy, it's all over, all of the cathedrals and everything else. You don't find it here because of the Maestrom program. What was it called, Cindy?
Graffiti Busters.
Graffiti Busters, yep. Exactly. It used to be you could just dial it up, 343 gone, and either the Boy Scouts at the very beginning or volunteers, or eventually they got a city paint machine that went out and fixed stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we have the importance of the graffiti thing in some communities is its territorial markers. Mm. Like, you know, you're in our neighborhood and this is, we control it. Well, if you can't keep it on the walls, you know,
then that it doesn't work.
It's an issue, you know, that goes away. So the graffiti buster thing, the beginning of Bridge Builders, you know, all had a way of making people proud of their community. And even little stuff like this doesn't deal with the international community. But this morning as we drove across town, there was a guy up there with a big bag picking up trash. And Maestrom had a wonderful plan that's also micro-territorial, and it's like, you know,
My part of town.
Clean it up. If there's garbage there, stop your car, put it in the bag, and, you know, fix it. You know, and so as budget things become more of an issue, all of this stuff, whether it's saying hello
this personal
to
stuff.
People, yeah, you know, that this town has a fabric for that, you know, all of us can enact and strengthen every single day. Mm-hmm. So
Well, you guys have this positive sort of outlook on life that you share and that you kind of exude, and we've heard it in an interview. And I, when I first heard about Bridge Builders, I have to admit I was kind of skeptical. I thought, like, okay, you're going to have these other people over for dinner and talk, and that'll probably be the end of it. What's that ever going to accomplish? And yet it grew and grew, didn't it, Malcolm? It became something really major.
Yeah, it really. It all started with Mayor Maystrom had a couple of us find out the ethnic groups that had organizations in town, and we found 14 of them. And we asked them all to send three couples to a barbecue in the back in the garden of Rick Maystrom. And so all these folks showed up. And then we were randomly paired up. But we had to make the commitment. We had to sign a commitment that Maystrom had written out that we would host the other family to our home, or if home wasn't possible, to a restaurant of our choice, and then there'd be a reverse dinner. Well, we were fortunate to be compared with, to be paired
combined
up.
With,
pardon?
Combined with.
Combined with Susan Churchill, who's of Japanese-American heritage, and her husband. And they came to dinner with, they brought a couple who were working for one of the oil companies, who had met in camp. Well, in camp to them mean an internment camp.
Oh, my gosh.
Because during Second World War, all the Japanese-American and the West Coast and so on, including Alaska, were put in internment camps. And so here they are at our dinner table talking about camp, both in a positive sense and a really tough sense. And so that just moved on and on and on, and it's still going strong. Cindy, help pick up from there.
It just...
Well, one of the things that I know you did was come up with this booklet, which contains sort of etiquette tips for dealing with any culture.
Yes.
So that if you are having, I don't know, a Samoan or a Nigerian or anybody else to dinner, you know, like, what are the social cues? Right.
Yeah.
And you compiled all that. Was that your baby, Cindy?
Well, it was Cindy's idea.
It started on our living room because someone said, I don't even know how to use forks. I'm Polynesian. You know, we don't do forks.
Oh, because people are nervous when they're going to have dinner at somebody else's house.
Right.
And they feel
absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Terrifying.
Absolutely.
And it was hard for the host as well as for the guest. So we had committed to do these dinner exchanges, and we kept finding out that there were questions we had to research each time. So that became a thing called Passport to Anchorage. And until I think the 2010 edition of that is fully distributed, and there's a team working on doing a new one.
Great.
That can be used across the community. You know, Bridge Builders has all the credits for starting it, but we've talked to the police force, we've talked to the Department of Education.
Oh my gosh, what a great handbook, because it just takes away some of the anxiety and helps you not make a faux pas or whatever.
Exactly
right.
Which is for the Native community and for every community, and even for like the dominant society. We might not think that we have little weird little things, but we do.
We do. Yeah.
All right. So I want to get into the writing of this memoir. My guests, Malcolm and Cindy Roberts, have written this book, Magic Moments, which they're distributing, I guess, out of your garage. But you can buy a copy at at the UAA bookstore or Two Friends Gallery, or you can send them an email at mal@gci.net, mal@gci.net. And they're also doing a talk at the Senior Center next Tuesday, the 18th, from 10 to 12. So writing a memoir is challenging because for a lot of reasons. One is you don't know what's interesting to yourself and what's interesting to other people. Mm-hmm. How did you get over the hump of actually writing a memoir and putting it out to people? And you didn't hire somebody else to do it. You did it yourself. You both have written books before. You know how to write, but you didn't necessarily hadn't done this before. Who, you want to take that one first, Malcolm?
Well, it just seemed to we took it sort of chronologically when we arrived. It was 35 degrees below in Anchorage. We remembered that day very well. And
what have we gotten ourselves into?
Right. And my former boss, who was Secretary Wally Hickel, had come home and they actually invited us to stay at their home. And they have a hotel. But it was, my gosh, what kind of community is this? You know, really a warm, friendly community. We just started telling the story there. And help me, Cindy,
how did you come up with this idea of both telling? I mean, that's the other pitfall of a memoir, is that it sounds very egotistical to just tell your own story. But you kind of get around that by sort of telling it together.
We did get around it. Yeah, it was very interesting because Mal, having written speeches and articles, you know, for Hickel and for Maestrom and other people, you know, just talking into a tape recorder, you hand it to the typist and they, you know, slam it on paper and that's draft one and you build from that and craft it and cut and paste. Thank God for computers as opposed to the old-fashioned way. And he had a typist who worked in the same office downstairs, meaning me. And the drafts would come through where Mal would tell the story, you know, according to the outline that we figured out. And he'd say, add here, you know, and so that just started it. And I would add in a different font and a different color. So that as you read through it, it would be like, oh, okay, add this perspective.
Back and forth, yeah.
Yeah, and instead of saying which one was Cindy and which, I guess we did keep that in there. But, you know, if someone has an eye for it, you find out one of them's blue and one of them's black.
Right.
And of course, all the jokes are black and blue trying to get this thing done.
But, how long did it take you to do this project? It's a big book.
I'd say a year and a half.
Active duty, a year and a half.
Wow. And a zillion photos, which also makes it much more fun.
It is.
And a lot of them are color photos, mm-hmm. and it really dresses it up. We have a wonderful friend who designed the book for us as we went, and we gave him sainthood for his patience because we were always changing it and stuff like that. But that's how we did it.
Any tips? You're going to be talking about giving tips next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But what kind of tips would you give to folks? I mean, having done this, I did one with Governor Hickel. I did one with Dave Rose. I did one with Vic Fisher. Each a very different person, with a different goal. But it seems like one of the things that I mean, I'm often asked about it. To me, an important tip is just get started.
Yeah.
Right? Even if you can't write, even if you don't know where you're going, start getting your stories down on tape, because your children, your grandchildren are going to appreciate it, even if you never write anything, right? But just getting started is really hard for a lot of people.
Oh, you bet. That's a good point. Very good point. Well, I don't know. Once we got going, we were really having fun doing it, and we were just cranking them out. And I don't know, Cindy, how many chapters there are. But about 20, I suppose, all Cindy's comments are in blue and mine are in black.
And so you that brings up my other question I was going to ask is, what's the secret to your relationship? I mean, really, it's
type faster.
It comes across from folks who meet you. I think that you guys have a fantastic marriage.
Thank you.
Well, speaking as the husband. We do have a fantastic marriage. At least, in other words, I have a fantastic wife. Let's put it that way.
There you go.
It's pretty even. It's pretty even. Yeah.
So we're going into a new era in Alaska, and I think that's pretty clear. You've seen almost the whole history of the state. You were here within the first 10 years of its founding, and you've been involved in politics and public policy that entire time. Put a lot of work into the pipeline, the gas pipeline, which is, as yet, is still a dream. Mm-hmm. Some folks are leaving. Some folks are saying our best days are behind us. I can't believe that's your attitude, and knowing you. But I'm curious I'd like to hear from both of you. Maybe if you want to start, Malcolm, how do you feel about Alaska's future and where we're going next and what we can still hope for?
Well, I have a very optimistic view of the future. I mean, we have incredible natural resources. We have incredible beauty in terms of tourism and so on. We also have, right now, we have a wonderful mayor of Anchorage.
Ethan Berkowitz.
Ethan Berkowitz and his wife, Mara, is a close friend of ours, and she's also very talented and wonderful first lady of the city. We have a wonderful governor. Bill Walker and his Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. We have a chapter on that. It's called the
Unity Ticket.
The Unity Ticket, and it's a model for the rest of the country as far as we're concerned. So
getting beyond the partisanship.
Getting beyond the partisanship, and emphasizing values and getting our economy healthy and caring about not just oil and gas, but also alternative energy sources and so on. I have a very positive view about our future.
Cindy, what do you think?
I agree with that. I think it's important to add on to that now. I mean, we spoke to the university, was that last night? and to the young people who have a different, you know, the boom period is not now. Mm-hmm. But the heritage in so many different categories is the technology that has been developed to keep things clean and functional and responsive, and the people have a mindset that's responsible. I don't think Alaskans will tolerate, you know, the bottom line, we're not going to do that right because it costs too much, we'll just pay the fines. I think they go home and talk to their kids and they go, okay, I'll do it right. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a culture and a demand for quality. And it's how you treat people on the streets, whether the old guy helps the strange lady to carry mm-hmm. her groceries out to the car across the ice. You know, there's just that personal thing here.
That sort of Alaska spirit is still there.
It's there, and we need to work to keep it there.
All right.
One of the other things is that if you ever go to a meeting of AFA, which is the Alaska Filipino
Federation of Filipino Americans.
And you hear their report of what they do in terms of helping with cleanup day, helping with this, helping with that. They're doing all sorts of things for our wider community. This is the Filipino community, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's true in many others.
Yeah, yeah. There's a great sense of public service in those ethnic communities, and also in the sort of service clubs of which a lot of folks are members of.
Sure.
There's a question here that I want to get in. We've only got about a minute left. This is Mark, who's asking your thoughts on the oil and gas tax credit system, which I would add sort of the fiscal gap issue that will be solved in the next month or not solved in the legislature. Malcolm, I mean, if you can give us the thumbnail sketch, what kind of solution do you want to see?
Thanks.
Cindy's going to take this one.
Okay.
No, I'm not. But, you know, you wrote an outstanding article that captured information and instinct and analysis of Vic Fisher.
Mm-hmm. And yesterday.
I mean, you know, folks, if you haven't thrown away the paper yet, go back and read our host's, you know, column. I mean, this is the time to make good decisions and responsible, long-term fiscal ones. And I mean, we've gotten off the hook for a long time. We pay so few taxes compared to everybody else. And
in the nation, we're the least taxed population in the nation. It's high time we had a state tax for all of us.
All right. Great. Well, thank you. The hour has just sped by for me. My guests have been Malcolm and Cindy Roberts. Thank you, Malcolm.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you.
Their book is Magic Moments. I mentioned where you can get it. They're also speaking next Tuesday morning at the Senior Center. Our producer is Dave Waldron. My name is Charles Wolforth. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska. Next week, your host will be Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.